Hey everybody, Mike Lejeune here with Game Changers for Government Contractors. We have a special guest here today, Ms. Stephanie Alexander. Before we dive in and start talking about your journey and everything going on in your life
the last year or so,
let's give everybody a little bit of an intro on who you are, what you do, companies you manage, all that kind of stuff.
All that stuff. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Stephanie Alexander. I am the CEO and founder of a company called Boost. B-O-O-S-T. And little known fact, it wouldn't be GovCon if it didn't stand for an acronym, right? Because my God, all we do is spew acronyms. So Back Office Organizational Support Team. Back in the day when I started, I felt the need to tell everyone that. Now nobody cares. And, you know, I'm the only one that happens to know that. Our company works with federal contractors. It's the only people that we work with. And we do all of the corporate support, anything from accounting, contracts, HR, talent acquisition, basically strategic advice. So management consultants through and through. And then I also am the co-founder, and I have a much better work wife on that one, or colleague, co-founder of GovMeets. And we're an online teaming platform for federal contractors. So what does that really mean? It means that I'm too tired to learn new people. So everything I do is in federal contracting. We like to tell people we're kind of like match.com for GovCons, only we can't write that down because we don't want to get sued. So match.com, don't sue us. But I think you get the idea. As you know, everybody's got subcontracting goals. They've got teaming partners. We're all frenemies in this world. And so it's putting good people with good people to go out and win new business.
That's awesome. On the Boost side, one of the challenges that I see for a lot of our clients, and so it'd be great to get your thoughts on this. How small of a company do you typically work with? Because there's a lot of GovCons in that $500,000, $1 million range. They're growing. They're projecting they're going to hit $3-5 million over the next year or so, and nobody wants to touch them. So I'm just kind of curious, like, where do you typically come in the picture? I'd love to hear your thoughts.
You're a pain in the ass. You don't know anything. You don't have any resources. And we're all kind of like the level of compliance that you have to do because you are a federal contractor. Nobody's, as long, stay off the front page of the Washington Post. Here's the best advice I can get is honestly, no one cares. You were going to be on a T&M contract or a firm fixed price. The regulations that you were supposed to be following are a lot less onerous at that point. You're not going after CPFF prime work when you're under $1 million, right? Like you just have to like understand where you are in the dynamic. And so until you get to a certain size, it's almost like, don't do it. Be good to your people. Don't get sued. Follow as many of the rules as you possibly can, pay your payroll taxes, hire somebody to make sure that you're paying your bills and getting paid because people often forget the AR side of it. Mm-hmm. But in reality, like there's only so much we can do for you at that point because we don't want to overload you with like a ton of compliance when we're like, dude, you can slip by another year or two on this, right? Like we're going to set you up for it. But like at a certain stage, business development always comes first. Get the business, drive the business in. With the business comes the level of, then you can start layering in the compliance, you can start layering in the additional employees, you start to build your company, right? But in the beginning, don't worry about any of that crap. Go get the business.
Right.
I mean, you got to pay the bills, right? So you got to pay the bills to be able to generate enough business to actually want to work with people like me. Does that make sense?
I love that explanation. At what level do you typically see as the ideal client to be working with? Is it 5 million, 10 million? Like where does that come in for you?
Yeah. So I think it depends. Like, I think, Mike, you know this, you see a people that they high ranking BD capture people from a nice system integrator that have a lot of connections. Like, you know, they're going to go fast, right? Like, you know, they're going to grow it. Somebody who's quite new, doesn't really understand federal contracting, doesn't really get the gist of it, you know that they're going to take a little bit longer to get that hockey stick, right? Mm-hmm. So if they're the first people, we'll take them on a little earlier because we can see kind of like, all right, three new contracts. We already know that you got drug deals going on. We know you got subcontracts with a couple of your buddies and we see how it's going to grow, right? So you might as well layer us in now because we can see it. If you're still trying to figure it out, et cetera, I'm kind of like, just get a basic bookkeeper. Just get some basic support to make sure that you're not screwing it up. You're not going to payroll jail. You're not on, on the front page of the Washington Post. But like for those types of folks, like it's going to take a little bit longer. Right. So ideally for Boost, we're trying to, you know, usually it's like 5 million-ish, give or take. But we swoop down earlier and we also go higher, right? So we actually have billion-dollar companies as clients, which is weird, but you know, it is not for ongoing support, usually projects. But for our audience, I would say, you know, it really just depends on how fast you're gonna grow and when you need to do it. Because there is a time where there's that delicate, and this is always a balance, right? Like I don't want to expend too much in G&A. But like the earlier I put in the systems and the processes, the better I am geared for high growth, right? Like I don't want to be putting in brand new accounting systems when I'm like $25 million. I don't want to be learning new offer letters at $10 million, right? Like I want to have my systems in place. I want to have my HRIS system going. I want to look at contract review. Like I want to start layering that in, but it depends on how fast that growth curve is going to be.
That's great advice. You know, and we see that a lot too, because we work with people that we always describe them as can't spell government. They're that brand new. We're like, you can't really spell it, don't know how it functions and works. So they may even be thinking about what should I sell to the government? So we work with that up to the billion-dollar companies. And they all have kind of the same problems. It's
Yes.
really wild when you look at, we have a client right now that's doing about $3 billion. And we're like, you have the exact same problem as this company that's doing $1 million. Exact same problem. You don't know what you don't know, and you know you're very
It's
confused about the
different
market.
flavors of the same
Yeah.
problem,
Yeah.
right?
It's
And it just
just at
gets,
scale.
it's just at scale. And that's just it. I know when I first started my company, I always had the mindset, well, if I can just do this, right? If I can just solve this problem, if I can just solve this problem. And here is the dirty secret. There is no end to problems. They just scale, multiply, and have bigger impacts. So there is never, no CEO finishes up a Friday afternoon having done everything on their to-do list and having solved all their company's problems. Like, does not happen. So, like, you kind of have to be comfortable with the uncomfortable, and you have to be comfortable with the idea that you will always have something new, a new challenge to resolve, right? And the minute you whack that, it's whack-a-mole. The minute you hit that one problem and you feel like you've solved it, something else will pop. Something else will pop up.
It's like your problems start having children
They
and they
do.
start
They
having
multiply
children.
like bunnies.
I think that's some really good advice for people that are, you know, in this and they're struggling with why people don't want to work with them. I think your point there that some of it really is just a pain in the ass to kind of get those smaller clients into a certain area that they don't need to be. Because I think part of the problem in this industry is there are a lot of really good, scary sales pitches out there of why you need to hire me in order to grow. And then you get those people on a call and they're like, well, you're too small to work for us, work with us and this and that. Or, hey, there's this thing we can sell you or whatever. And it really doesn't solve their problem, but they're so scared and paranoid that they're going to screw up and get sued by the government, which, you know, you probably should be, right? That
Ish.
they're panicked out there trying to find a solution to something that's not really a problem, when the problem, like you said, is just grow the damn company. Just grow the company.
Materiality, right? When you're a billion-dollar company, the government is in your right there. They're sitting beside you,
They're
right?
in your business. So,
You're 500,000, nobody cares.
yeah.
And like that's the cold hard truth, right? Is it like you're really like again, do the right thing by your people. Don't be assholes. Continue to be as compliant as you can. Pay your damn payroll taxes. Don't screw people over. The fundamentals you learned in kindergarten are still true in business 101, right? And try and do the right things. The best strategy is to layer in the compliance. And a lot of people I know are out there like, oh my God, 50 people, you have to have all this stuff for HR. TCA compliance, you've got to have all this stuff in accounting. You know, contracts, oh, blah, blah, you know, like it's kind of fear mongering. And it's kind of like, again, materiality, right? You want to plan for it. You want to take it seriously. My entire freaking company is built on compliance, right? Like, so there's a lot of BS you got to do when you're taking Uncle Sam's dollars, but it's also one of the best industries in the world and it's the biggest. So like, are you here for the long term? Then get this stuff in place, but do it in a way that makes sense. Win the freaking work first, right? Like, I can't help you if you haven't won the work. Go get the money. Go get the money. Do a good job delivering. We'll figure it out. Like, we can solve problems,
And that's
right?
really the hardest part of it all is getting the money. It's getting the contract. Because all the other stuff you're talking about, it's just, it's process, it's procedures, it's
absolutely, you know,
systems, things like that, things that have already been solved, just not necessarily applied to your company. So they aren't really 100%. Problems.
You have to have something that people want to buy and sell it at a price that people will pay.
Yeah.
Business 101. And it applies to the government. So who's going to buy it? How are they going to procure it? What's the type of contract vehicles they're going to use? And how will they get money to you? Otherwise, you're just wasting your time.
We could just do a podcast on this today.
Oh my God, yeah. I have like, I'm sorry, yeah. Rabbit hole for sure, yeah. But I have strong opinions.
No, we could definitely go down this rabbit hole and I could get on some soapboxes, you know, very quickly about how people are being trained in the market and again, the fear mongering that goes on, but we'll save that for another time. What I'm wanting
podcast
to get into-
Podcast part two.
Yeah, this is part two, yeah. Part of what I wanted to get into today with you was, you know, there's this quote that you've probably heard before about how like everybody has a plan until you get hit with life, right? Life comes in, smacks you in the face, and then you have to deal with that. I deal with it on small levels all the time. You're going and all of a sudden you get COVID. You're going and all of a sudden something happens in your personal life and somebody gets sick or dies or a dog gets sick or whatever. And it just derails you at some point because it wasn't in your plan. When I looked at your LinkedIn post over the last year and a half or so, you know, you've had some things that have derailed you, yet you've stayed focused. And I think the bigger part of this story today is like the hope and how you have kept your spirits up and stayed positive and bounced back and all of that. And I'm sure it wasn't always rosy for you, but I wanted to start out by just letting you tell everybody, like, what's the last year and a half of your life look like?
I think I could very much say that 2023 was an absolute shit year. Without doubt, without a doubt. Beginning 2 days before Christmas in 2022, I received the news that I had stage one breast cancer and had to wait. Fun fact, worst time of the year to ever get sick or have need test or need expertise because everyone's on vacation and the worst part of anything is waiting, right? So absolute worst time. Do not do things in December and January when everybody's using their deductibles and all the doctors are on vacations, right? Skiing or doing whatever they do. So anyway, so I found out I had stage one breast cancer. So dealing with that ride in the beginning of 2023, I had a mastectomy on February 1st, 2023. I did not have radiation or chemo, but I, you know, going through basically splitting my guts open to reconfigure a boob out of my tummy. That sounds disgusting and horrible and was not fun and not easy and not a small surgery. So dealing with all the ramifications of that. Then layering on preventative cancer care, which is tamoxifen for me and is a drug that has really not fun side effects and navigating what that looks like, navigating the return back to work and not having your energy, not having, you know, just kind of like not being able to focus, not having like any of the things that just 6 months ago you thought you had. And then finally, 2023 was not done with me yet. Because at the end of 2023, in the last quarter, my asshole dog ran me over at the dog park. And that basically had a tibia fracture, which resulted in having yet another surgery and being on crutches for a whopping 80 days. Living on the bottom floor of my split-level house, not being in my own bed, I didn't see my closet or my bathroom or my bedroom for about 3 months, sleeping on the sofa on a twin mattress, you know, all the things that became incredibly difficult, things that we take for granted every day. Being able to take, number one thing, being able to take a cup of coffee from the kitchen to my office. Sounds so easy. Sounds so, you know, but when you're on crutches and it involves five different steps and moving from point A to point B and not being able to actually do the things, it was a complete loss of independence. It was a complete loss of just everything it felt like at the time. Further compounded by the death of a close friend from cancer at the ripe old age of 50 that came out of nowhere, that just hit hard, hit really hard. So I would say last year, I probably was at my absolute lowest, probably in December, which is actually not that long ago. But as with everything, it's kind of like, what's the alternative? You have to keep going, right? Like you have to, like the alternative, am I just going to like lay here? I'm way too young for this shit. Am I just going to give up? No, I have obligations. I have employees. I have a lot more life in me. I have a lot more to do. I have a lot more substance, right? And so it became kind of like, okay, well, what is my story going forward? And what am I going to focus on? The silver lining to having such a really crappy year and kind of bad experiences are you kind of come into your own with a lot of clarity. And you realize how many things really don't matter. And you realize what really does. And so as I start 2024, I feel like I'm starting the year, even though we're kind of into the year, with a focus that I feel like I may not have ever had before in my life. That like, I know what my priorities are. I know what my goals are this year. I know what is important. And every single thing that happens, I think to my, what are my priorities in life? And where does this rank? And do I care? Right? Like, what is important? And like, what do you want to do with your life? That becomes way more clear. That was a lot of talking. Sorry.
No, that was all really good. I could just listen to it. How does something like this, or the whole journey there, how does it affect you like emotionally, mentally? You kind of talked around the edges of it there. And while it's affecting you at that level, how do you keep your spirits up?
Right. I will tell you that cancer is a total mind F. We'll try and keep it on the PC level here. And anyone who's been through it will tell you the same. You immediately, when it happens, you're like, oh my gosh, get it out of me. Do the thing, do the treatment, do the stuff, right? And then you're kind of left. And there's this whole like PTSD from the experience and the emotional aspect of it. I view myself as being smart enough to have recognized that there is definitely a mental aspect. So I started counseling pretty much right after my mastectomy to kind of work through a lot of it. You go through all the stages of grief, like what your life before you, in the beginning, you think you're going to get back to your previous life. And in reality, that's never going to happen. You have been permanently changed by this experience, mentally, physically, and emotionally. You have been through the shit. And whether it's cancer or some other traumatic event, people do this all the time, right? And so you kind of have to level set on your mindset. Like, what does that mean, right? Like, who am I? Who am I? I'm not a new person. I'm still me, but I'm like forever altered by this experience. And how do I show up for people? How do I show up in my own life? And I mean, yeah, it was really crappy a lot of different times, and particularly losing a lot of my energy, right? Like, I didn't feel like myself. But I knew that I would get through it. Like, you have to have the resilience. You have to know and believe in yourself that this too shall pass, right? This too will, this is a phase of life. This is not forever. Just like when you have down times in your business, right? This isn't forever either. Like, you go through crappy times and you recognize you're really grateful for the good times. I think one of the biggest secrets of life is recognizing and being in the moment and recognizing when it's good, right? Like when your team is firing on all cylinders and you've won the contracts, when you're at the height of it, right? When your family's doing really well and they're healthy and everybody's kind of getting along at least enough, then you're in the middle of it, right? Like when you're feeling good enough to take a neighborhood dog walk or to go, you know, on a walk with your elderly parents or your spouse or your kids. When you recognize the goodness in the everyday mundaneness and you recognize when it is good and can appreciate it in the moment, that is clarity. And that allows you to know that this too shall pass, the good and the bad, and that when you're in the good, you enjoy every last ounce of it, knowing that, yeah, life's going to throw you another curveball at some point. And it could be a parent, it could be your spouse, it could be, you don't know what's going to happen, right? And so knowing that you have the resiliency to continue and that you'll get it to the other side is life-changing.
I love every bit of that. I think that is probably the hardest part for a lot of business owners is you are just kind of chugging along, doing your thing, and especially successful folks. We tend to focus on like what's next. Like I've just done this and now I'm focusing on what's next instead of taking that moment to be like, wait a minute, I just finished this thing that was monumental.
I did the thing.
I did the thing.
My team did the thing, yeah, right? I think if you asked my team, they would tell you as of last year, I didn't thank them enough, and I probably didn't recognize like the celebrations. And now I think as my mantra, I'm like, guys, we're doing like really, really well. Or, hey, we just went through a really hard thing and I'm proud of us because like we kicked ass on that. Or, hey, you know, this wasn't our finest moment, but at least we learned some lessons and like we're going to move out on it, right? Like to really celebrate the good, the bad, and the ugly.
As I was telling you before we hit record on here, you know, over the years, I have talked to a handful of your employees for one reason or another. We've connected online and wind up on a phone call, and everybody's always raved about you. It's always been completely unsolicited, just, oh, I love what Stephanie's done over here and what she's built and all that kind of stuff. So in the background, they're definitely impressed with, you know, who you are and what you've been able to help them do and guide with your team. So that's been a big thing. And I can't imagine it just getting much better, you know, on this back end of here, which kind of leads me to my next question for you is, I know that running a company, much less two companies successfully under the perfect conditions, require a ton of dedication and energy. How did you, or did you even adapt like your leadership style, your operational strategies, just to maintain the business while you're going through the self-described shit that you went through?
100% reliance on two amazing work wives. My COO at Boost, Lisa Linden, who's been with me for 10 plus years. She knows where all the bodies are buried. She knows the skeletons in the closet. She has been through the thick with me. She took the command. My co-founder at GovMates, Katie Bylick, who has, again, knows where all the bodies are buried. These two women have been incredible for me for the last year. So they both rose to the occasion. They didn't miss a beat. Everything kept going. And under their leadership, I think both companies thrived. I think we all have our roles to play. And I think that you just have to know, like, I think leaders feel like they're so important and they feel like nothing can get done if they're not around and they feel like they can't take a vacation. They're so important. In reality, you haven't built a decent company if you are so important because you are not scalable, you have not delegated, and you have no idea, you know, like your team needs to be able to thrive without you. The one thing I think I am smart enough to do is to hire smarter people. And I say that all the time. I'm like, I built my company so that occasionally I can go on vacation and I don't check email and I don't call in and I don't want to hear from you, quite frankly. And they don't want to hear from me either. That's how you know that you're building something that has value. That's how you know that you're building a culture where people take accountability for their actions and they're responsible. Like if you can't delegate and you can't build your teams to operate without you, then it's an ego play. We all have our roles and I'm much more clear on what my role is within both organizations, but it's like you have to let people thrive without you. And in doing so, then you can have a really shit year and things are still good. Yeah. Boost grew year over year, I think 17% on the top line. GovMates also did really well. Like, I mean, they didn't skip a beat. Do I feel like some things were missing because I wasn't there? Yeah, a little bit. But I mean, it wasn't a catastrophic year on either company. And that's because my teams are awesome. It's not because of me. It's because I wasn't around and my teams are really, really good.
It's what you built prior to the shit year. It's really a testament to what you did before all of that happened to make sure it was set up, even though you didn't know it was coming or expected in any way.
100%.
But it really is a testament to that. Many leaders really struggle with showing any sort of vulnerability. Yet, like I said, I've watched you for a year. It's not every post from you, but you've shared your journey enough, you know, that I've been following it and been waiting for updates here and there to see those come through and glad to see them when they come through. But given the fact that most people in a position like yourself struggle with that, I know it had to be key through this. How did that vulnerability play a role in like the personal, professional relationships that you had? And did you see unexpected benefits from that vulnerability?
So I think people who know me and people who work with me know that if anything, I'm known for being extremely direct, probably too much so sometimes, which is something I will work on and continue to work on my entire life. And transparency, right? It's like, how do you want to manage? How do you want to be seen? I don't have the bandwidth, fortitude, or ability to be different people to different people, right? So I am authentic and genuine in every one of my discussions and relationships because I don't know any other way to be. Because quite frankly, I'm busy. I have two companies. I have a life, right? Like I don't have time to put on different facades for different people. And so I think that when you act with transparency and honesty, like people ask me this question and I'm like, I didn't know any other way to be. And I kind of was like, well, I'm going through some really crappy stuff. And I hope that maybe in posting about it and talking about it openly on LinkedIn, that it helps folks. That was always my goal, right? Like, I hope that this is useful for someone. And honestly, I got more out of it probably than anyone because people were genuinely concerned and genuinely supportive. And I was like, thank you, tribe. Because at a time where I didn't know what I was facing, I didn't know what I was in for, it was really nice to see people post nice things, right? I benefited from it. And I just hoped that other people would benefit as well and know that they're not alone. It can be very, very lonely in the CEO spot. And I think that it doesn't always have to be. I understand why it is. And sometimes I too am lonely, but I think it's good for leaders to hear from other leaders. Like, hey, it's okay to have a shit year. It's okay to have a bad performance. It's okay to not know all the answers. I know none of the answers these days, right? Like the older I get, the less I know. But the more I'm open to hearing from others and others' experiences and wanting to learn from other leaders. So I hope that was my goal. I hope that I did it. I've had many people come up to me and just, you know, share their own journeys and their own health and their own things. And I'm like, great. Like, I hope that this is helpful for you.
I think it definitely is. I've said before, even just watching some of the things transpire, I'm like, gosh, I don't have an excuse today. You know, yeah. As you're posting stuff,
get off the couch, man.
Like, I don't want to do this, but I could get up. And here she is wanting to do something and can't get up off the couch. Yeah. You know? And I just don't have the excuse. And honestly, you know, there's some days you still are like, I'm still sleeping in and not doing the whatever because I just don't want to. But more often than not, it's definitely you gave folks like myself somebody to say, you know, get your ass out there and do what you're supposed to do because you can. And I can't right now. And that's part of it, but also just the getting through it and fighting. Cause I think every CEO, every business owner, every executive, there's always something that you're struggling with. It could be in the business. It could be at home. It could be in your mind. And to see that somebody else has a struggle of any kind and they're fighting through it and they're not necessarily focused on, well, we've got to double the company while I'm sick. You know, it's like, you know what? It's going to suck and we'll fix it later. I see that a lot where people are like, well, we've somehow got to figure out how we're going to double the company, even though I'm in a hospital bed on chemo. I had a client years ago that was, we started a book project and I was helping him write his first book. And we were probably in our second phone call and he got diagnosed with throat cancer. And I was like, Lee, you need to stop and you need to take some time. And he was like almost 70 and he's like, it'll be fine. And probably like a month or two in after that, he was like, remind me again what your name is. You know, we get on a call and he's like, I know. And so like we were having those kind of challenges and it's like, man, just take the time. You don't like, no, yeah. I can't take the time. You know, I gotta do this and gotta do that. And you know, that was almost 10 years ago. And he's thriving and doing well. And he has a business that focused on public speaking in healthcare because it totally transformed his life. But it was like, we as CEOs and owners don't seem to think we can take the time to recover. Sometimes it's like, well, like you said, I'm too important to take the time where it's like, hey, we need you to get better.
Yeah.
We need you to do that. And
you need to have built a team that you trust that can handle stuff in your absence. You don't know all the answers. You don't have all, you know, like if you've built a team focused on you as an owner, then you've done yourself a disservice.
You've talked a little bit about your work wives in both companies and how well they've taken care of you and things. Was there anybody else in the system? We don't necessarily have to point them out by name or whatever, where like in your support system that you didn't know how much you needed and they stepped up and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad this person or these three or four people stepped up and did things for me. Maybe it was family. I don't know.
I would
I'm
be
just curious.
100% remiss if I did not personally say that my beloved and life partner, Frank, was 100% with me the entire time. And he and I, like, and it's all about, you know, your relationship and so and what you thrive under and what you don't thrive under and navigating those boundaries. He has been an absolute rock star this whole past year, and I couldn't have asked for anyone to be more supportive or loving or caring and go through the shit with me and show up at the doctor's appointments and help me where I need to and bring the coffee from the kitchen to the office and do the dishwasher and all the cooking and all the cleaning and all the things, right? And all the stuff. Do I love being in a relationship where I felt so off kilter and not helping and not doing anything? Absolutely not. And this, the minute I could get back to kind of more equilibrium, it was better for the relationship. But honestly, it thrived, right? I love that man. That is my man. That's my ride or die, right? Like that's just what it is. And in showing me his attitude and what he's been through over the past year, I'm clearly that for him and he is that for me.
I feel like after you say that, I'm like, I don't want to ask her any more questions. I just want to end it right there. But yeah, I have a
Okay.
couple more questions. Reflecting on like this whole experience, what you've touched on this a little bit. What are, in your opinion, like the most significant couple of lessons like you learned from all this?
I knew it before, but I really know it now to build your teams, right? Empower your teams, get your folks, you know, like again, build a team and build a company where you can go, you can be gone for 3 months and it won't completely fall down, right? So build for scale and build for breadth. I think having clarity and focus on what's important. Right? Whatever that is for you. And it's different for everybody. And there is no right or wrong answer because my answer for me personally might be very different than you, might be different than other people. And comparing yourself to what everybody else is doing or what bullshit they're posting on LinkedIn or how many contracts they've won and what their team looks like, if you keep comparing yourself to others, you will always fail. Your path is different than everybody else's. And then again, I keep going back to knowing when to appreciate when you're in the good and when you're in the bad, and knowing that no matter what, it will change and life will throw good stuff at you and bad stuff at you. And the ability to adapt and maneuver and flex and shift is important. Sometimes work isn't the most important thing, and that's okay. It is not a weakness, it is not a negative. It just means that, especially as a leader, like today is not the day. This month is not the month. This year is not the year. So stop holding yourself and other members of your team to unrealistic expectations if that is indeed the case.
I love all that.
Simmer
And
down.
yeah, simmer down. Just calm down. I showed this this little meme the other day to my daughter because we were always talking about like goals and different things. And
Yeah.
it was I'm gonna mess it up when I say this, but it was something along the lines of Mount Everest is covered with people, you know, like dead bodies of people that were super excited about their journey. It's like, so
Right?
just calm down. So just calm down. You know, something along
Chill
those.
out,
Yeah, chill out a
right?
little bit, you know, because they start the journey and don't make it. But anyway, it's kind of funny. I really
Totally.
appreciate you coming on and being open about this stuff. Like I have shared with you before the podcast, watching your journey, it was emotional for me, and I didn't know you. I didn't know you. And I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm just like, man, I hope she's doing well. And I didn't know you well enough to comment on things and
Yeah,
say
sure.
whatever. I'm just the faceless name in
Go
the crowd
team.
here, you know?
Yeah.
And
Yay,
but
you. Good job living.
Good job living. But, thank you for sharing it all. Thank you for coming on and being willing to talk about it. And, Absolutely. You've got a support system that is just really great on that side. But also externally, there's a ton of us out there as, CEOs, owners, that if you ever need anything, you reach out and we'll take your phone call 7 days a week and just be there to listen. And if that's all you need is to just vent about it. So again, thank you for coming on.
No, I so appreciate that. And thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you reaching out and allowing me to share. I just hope it's useful to someone. So that's always the goal.
I guarantee it will be. And for those folks that are not a pain in the ass and are ready to work with Booth.
Yes, of course.
reach out to Stephanie and her team and work with them because they're great
people.
Always
reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to be a resource. I'm happy to share, some knowledge and support. And also, if you do need any of the things that we do, sure. Feel free.
Okay. Awesome. So thank you again. I really appreciate you coming on today. I really hope you enjoyed the podcast today. If you did, I would really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe to the podcast and screenshot it and tag me on LinkedIn or whatever social media you use. So thank you again for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.